Welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at jwright929ESPN. As always, you can always listen on your radio dial 92.9 FM or 680 AM. But if you want to stay up to date and you're away from the radio, you can always do so by downloading the Odyssey app. Free to download. There's no subscription fee. All you got to do is download the Odyssey app, sign up to be notified to listen to 92.9 FM ESPN, and you can listen on demand anytime, anywhere. You can even rewind and listen to previous segments right there on the app. Dennis Fuller producing the program for us. Glad that he is with us. It's Football Friday, so that means my partner in crime is, of course, Tim Murray. Tim of VSiN College Football Betting Tailgate Show tomorrow morning, 9 a.m. Central Time. You can also download the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. You can also hear him on VSiN Primetime each and every weeknight on Twitter, on X, at one Tim Murray. Tim, good day, sir.
Hello, hello. Yeah, man. Fun time to be a sports fan. Crazy baseball last night. Football was meh, but it was football.
It happened.
And we got four college football games tonight, more playoff baseball tonight. Let's rock and roll, baby.
Yeah, we've also, it's Miami US Owls. It's our big rivalry game. We're playing Christian Brothers High School. It's, you know, we're separated by 3 miles. It's the all boys private school versus the all boys Catholic school. So it's a big one in town, playing for the 64th time. So excited about that. Of course, you can hear that call on 790 The Bet tonight. Pre-game will start at 6:45 over at Tom Nick Stadium at Christian Brothers High School. Let's tell everybody what we got coming up on the program. We'll start by talking about this big weekend that we have coming up. A few questions I want to get into. Blake Topmeyer is going to join us. Spirit of full disclosure, Blake and I had to record a little bit earlier. He's traveling today to Austin, so during the middle of his layover, I spoke with him about the big weekend in SEC football. We took a look back at last week, and we preview the big games for this weekend in the Southeastern Conference. We'll get into the list. Want to get Tim's thoughts. Tim, of course, also a big college basketball guy. I want to get Tim's thoughts on Tony Bennett's retirement. Also, I've noticed that there's a story from ESPN about the NBA and perhaps some books changing the way you can do props. We've also had some NFL news and more. We will have a new branding for where you will probably watch the Grizzlies for just one more year. We'll discuss that. We'll also get into our cards at that point. Games of the weekend. We'll tell your story, and then we will get out of here. But, Tim, I think I wanted to start here because I think, for me, this is the biggest question. And in terms of maybe the overall season, I don't know if it's going to be a make or break question. But for me, I think so far Texas has passed the eye test. And I said this earlier on another show. They've passed the eye test so much that when I was watching and enjoying the Oregon and Ohio State game, I kept thinking, man, these teams aren't in Texas's league. But if you look into who Texas has played, and granted, they've dominated them. And they've dominated them in a fashion that suggest it doesn't really matter who was on the other end of the field. Maybe we're just running into a 2019 LSU situation, and this team has been built for this. They've got a senior quarterback, and they're ready to roll with all the playmakers they have on offense, and they're good enough on defense. But they really have not played what I would even consider an average offense yet. And weirdly,
who's their best offense?
So the best offense statistically, if you go by scoring offense, it's Mississippi State, 79th in scoring offense. Then it would be, I want to say after that, maybe it was Monroe.
Don't mess around with General Booty.
Let's see, where did my...
Well, if you look at offensive efficiencies, let's do it by that. I believe Michigan is 85th. And I think that's the best offense that they've faced from an offensive efficiency. No, you're right, Mississippi State.
So I've got it now. If it's just offensive points scored, so if you want to look at yards per play, however, you know, wherever. I mean, in the end, scoring's part of it. So that's kind of how I looked at it. And usually offensive efficiency and scoring kind of goes hand in hand. I'm looking at offensive points, not total points scored.
Oklahoma's 105. Monroe is 109. Michigan is 85. Mississippi State is 58th. And UTSA is really bad this year. They're 99th. So, yeah. And Colorado State is down there, too.
Now, there's always this side of the argument. Look, what if those teams, part of their numbers, because this isn't a perfect sample set, right. And I filtered out for the FCS. I took out the FCS games. So I just did your FBS games. What did you do on offense? And maybe Texas's defense is so good that it drags them down. But I have a real question because I feel like what we have learned this year is that don't overreact and don't put too much stock into the last thing that you saw. Now, that also doesn't mean don't ignore the obvious. Maybe Texas really is that good because all the makings are there for them to be that good. They have an unbelievable NIL budget. They have a very good coach. They have two good quarterbacks. They've got a ton of skill guys. They've got NFL guys on the offensive line, and they're, I think it's fair to say, at least so far, I'm considering that they're improved defensively last year. Last year, I felt like they were so dominant up front, but they had weaknesses in the back seven. But this year, they might be a more complete defense.
So what I've been saying all week about this game is that I think Texas absolutely should be favored. I don't think this is a spot where I'm saying the wrong team is favored. Could Georgia win? Of course. It's college football. Anything can happen. But when you have this game getting out to where it is now, and knowing Kirby Smart and the way he gets his guys motivated, whether or not you believe in that type of stuff, I mean they haven't been able to say we're the underdog, even though they lied and said they were apparently, you know, prior to.
Sorry, I'm moving, so that's producer Rocco. He's with me. I apologize. You can cut my mic.
He's barking like the dog, baby. There we go.
Yes, he is. Well, I mean, in fairness, he does know dad's on the dogs.
I think that's a good omen for Georgia here. So, you know, maybe that's the sign that we needed to roll with Georgia here. But yeah, I think I look at this game and I look at the way that it's lined right now, and if I have an opportunity to take Georgia catching 4.5, 5, I'm going to have to do it. And if I get bit, so be it. But you don't get an opportunity in this day and age to take Georgia at a price like this. I think I made the comparison, and we might have talked about this on Tuesday. I might have made the comparison where late in the Patriots run, I was kind of bullishly just taking the Patriots as dogs, and it wasn't working out that well. I don't think the Georgia run is coming to a close. That said, I think Texas, the win over Michigan doesn't look nearly as impressive. Oklahoma had no wide receivers, so they got to do it against Georgia. They're at home. It's going to be a great atmosphere. Can't wait to watch this game, but I'm going to lean towards the dog here in this spot. As he takes care of his dog. Elsewhere around the landscape, Jeffrey, on this Saturday, you've got Alabama, Tennessee, which I think is certainly a fascinating spot where you've got both of these teams, since their, quote, signature win, are now kind of in prove-it land. And this, I don't know if this is an elimination game necessarily, but you know, for Tennessee to be losing their leading tackler and captain on the defense prior to this game, last week they're very fortunate to escape as a home favorite of north of 2 touchdowns against Florida. But the same can be said about Alabama. They're coming off the loss to Vanderbilt. How do they perform against South Carolina? They almost blow that game as well. So both of these teams, since their key win, Tennessee on the road at Oklahoma, Bama beating Georgia, have left a lot to be desired. Both have lost a game. Both probably, I don't know if they should have lost last week, but very much on the ropes in both of their games. And for both of these teams moving forward in this rivalry game, I think a loss probably sets them back in a spot where, in my eyes, because Tennessee still has to play Georgia, Alabama, I think, still has to play Ole Miss.
No, they have. They don't play Ole Miss this year. I want to say, do they have A&M? Maybe
they have Missouri.
Yeah, Alabama's schedule.
No, they have LSU. They're at LSU. Yeah, yeah.
It's at LSU this year too, I think.
Mm-hmm. So I knew there was a tricky game left. So I'm. It's not a full-on elimination game for this one, but it kind of feels like it will be a de facto elimination game in Knoxville this weekend.
Well, I actually think that's kind of an interesting question, because as we talked about on Tuesday, it does feel like we're addicted to saying, you know, this team's dead, it's over, moving on. I wonder this. Is the way that the SEC scheduled, and I don't know if it was intentional or not, but I do know what the result is. The two, you know, the team in Georgia that was the preseason favorite, the schedule's done them no favors. You're going to have to play at Bama, at Texas, at Ole Miss. You host Tennessee. But are we getting into this situation where, and they obviously they played Clemson, they scheduled Clemson at a quote-unquote neutral site. But I start to wonder, it's like, has the schedule kind of backfired to where, is there going to be a number of losses? Like, are we going to treat these teams, are we going to adjust for the schedule, or are we going to kind of start to pay attention to how many losses does this team have? How many losses does that team have? Because I do think that they could wind up in this situation where they kind of cannibalize themselves, but then they're also going to get into the reality possibly of, well, this was a good win, but now you've given the other team a loss, and so it kind of, is it as good of a win? Like, are you hurting your own resumes by having this many teams play each other?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard because then
I know it's very convoluted, and I did not exactly articulate that like a wordsmith, but do you kind of get the idea that I'm talking about?
I do, because Georgia's schedule, no one's going to cry over Georgia's strength of schedule, because wasn't it last year that they basically had, they faced
that's
no one?
It's why, like, in the end, like, the biggest reason they got left out when they did not win, they got docked. Like, we can do the whole, it was politics, whatnot, but they got docked in the end because Michigan? Someone canceled on them. Someone canceled on them, and then they couldn't really get a replacement, and so their Georgia Tech still counted as their other P5 game, and then they added like another MAC team.
Yeah, their schedule last year was laughable, and this year it's one of the most challenging schedules in the entire country, and it's gotten harder since, you know, the start of the year. I don't think we knew that Texas would be this good. Now, the Tennessee game, depending on the result this weekend, may not look as daunting as it once did. And Ole Miss losing last weekend certainly doesn't help them out as well. But
no, I mean, I think weirdly, Ole Miss and Tennessee need to be Georgia fans this week, because I have my serious questions about how Ole Miss is going to get off the mat after that loss on Saturday. Do I think it's entirely possible that they could get to the Georgia game with no more losses? Sure. I also think it's very much possible that that team starts to make some business decisions, because it was the type of team that was built for this one run. And now, you know what I mean? After that second loss, what are you playing for?
You talking about Ole Miss?
Yeah. And I mean, Tennessee could be in the same spot this weekend if they fall to Alabama.
I mean, Ole Miss doesn't play this weekend, right?
They're off, yeah.
They're off.
But Oklahoma, I actually think that's next. I think that's kind of bad.
You wanted them back on there?
Well, yeah.
I mean,
now they played seven straight games. That's also important to note. And they were starting to get really banged up.
I think they should take care of business on next Saturday against Oklahoma, who, speaking of banged up, is all sorts of banged up. And then you go to Arkansas. I mean, think about Arkansas's home schedule. I know this is kind of a caveat here, but Arkansas, their home schedule this year: Tennessee, LSU, and then Ole Miss and Texas. Like, damn, Fayetteville.
Well, and by the way, we've gotten to the middle of October, and they ain't dead yet.
No. They're winning this weekend also.
I hope so.
Sam Pittman as a dog, baby. Week to prepare.
Are we not worried about Taylor Green?
He's fully healthy, dude.
Are we sure?
I think he's fine.
So did he pull a Jordan Love? Because I thought after that injury, I thought he was dead.
I mean, he didn't finish the game, but we've had a week off. From all accounts, I think he's been practicing this week. He's not on the injury report.
I mean, the lines certainly suggest he's playing, correct?
I think he's playing. Yeah, I mean, look, lines kind of tell you the story, and, you know, all week it's funny because I recorded the podcast yesterday, the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. My partner comes in, and he's been red hot, and he's like, I like Georgia Tech. I'm like, dude, I don't think Haynes King's playing. He's like, what? I'm like, yeah. I'm like,
I no longer like Georgia Tech.
I was like, I'm pretty sure he's not going to play. And I know there was a lot of movement in that market. There was no real certainty. And then it came out today from Pete Thamel, that Haynes King is out. And now it's a 14-point spread. So, yeah, I mean, injury news is challenging in college. But the betting market, not always, but more often than not, kind of tells you the story. And I think Taylen Green is fine.
But, so, like, we're getting into this situation, though, with these teams, which is...
Look, here, at the end of the day, I know what's going to happen, is SEC is going to get, what, three or four teams in, they're going to be fired up and upset, and when this thing gets all restructured in 2026, they're going to have auto bids. They're going to have, because they have the most money, the Big Ten has the most money, and... I think we're going to come to the agreement, which I think will be terrible for the sport, where the Big Ten and the SEC will get 8 auto bids of the 14. And we talked about it a little bit on Tuesday. Because there's a realistic shot that, you know, outside of Texas and maybe Georgia, that we're going to continue to see this cannibalization of the conference. Alabama, Tennessee this weekend, LSU, Arkansas. Like, LSU right now is 8th in the country. They also have a loss on their ledger to USC. They play Alabama still. You know, they play Texas A&M still, right? Yeah, they play Texas
yes.
A&M still.
I think it's next week because I think that's why you and I kind of like Arkansas.
Right. So it's like LSU, are they a team that can maneuver their way through all of that with less than 3 losses? Maybe. But then you got 9-3 LSU. Where do they belong at the table? So... It's going to be really interesting to me because I think the first rankings come out in like 2 weeks. I think it's on Halloween night. We see the first rankings. And
I noticed, I think on Tuesday, I don't know if this was the first, but I noticed it was on the schedule. They did their mock rank. ESPN did their mock ranking show. And usually that's always an indicator it's a couple of weeks away.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, to your point. I looked top 10 teams. So yeah. I looked this up, and now it's a little misleading here. Week 0 and week 1, we didn't re-rank. So FSU lost as a top 10 team twice. I believe they're the right. first ever top 10 team to be 0-2 after week 1. But in week 1 and 0, we get FSU losing as a top 10 team. Week 2, we get Notre Dame losing to Northern Iowa or Northern Indiana.
Illinois.
Northern Illinois. Sorry, God. All my eyes come together. Nobody as a so this is top 10 team versus unranked team. Nobody lost in week 3, but UK scared the hell out of Georgia. Nobody lost as a top 10 team in week 4, but Vandy lost in double overtime to Missouri. Week 5, we had Ole Miss dropping to Kentucky and Utah knocking off Arizona, Arizona knocking off Utah, although I would put that in the Utah without Cam Rising's a kind of a no touch for me. Also, that week was when Virginia Tech scared the absolute hell out of Miami. Week 6, we had Bama losing to Vandy, Tennessee losing to Arkansas, Michigan losing to Washington. We also had the Miami-Cal game that night. We didn't have anyone lose last week, but we had the South Carolina-Alabama scare, the Tennessee-Florida scare, and then Penn State going to overtime to beat USC. And this week, so the possibilities this week, to me, there's two that really stick out. Oregon at Purdue. I'm not saying Purdue can't stay within 29 and a half, although that number keeps going up and up and up, so that makes me wonder something. But you have Miami on the road against Louisville tomorrow. I think the line's 5, 5 and a half right now.
Yeah, 4 and a half, 5. Yep.
Okay. I would be surprised if UVA knocks off Clemson at Clemson, but okay, it's on the slate. Number 8, LSU at Arkansas as a 2.5 point favorite. And then you also have Iowa State tomorrow night against UCF. So those are the ones. But, I mean, to me, it's like...
And if Haynes King was playing, I would have said Notre Dame, Georgia Tech. But Haynes King not being there, I don't see how Georgia Tech wins this game against Notre Dame.
Yeah. I mean, in Notre Dame's 12, right? I just did it as
Oh, you're doing
10.
Just top 10. Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah, because you go a little further, BYU plays Oklahoma State tonight.
Right.
Oklahoma State's been a disaster. However,
they did have a bye week, and
they had a bye week, and they're probably going to change quarterbacks.
And their coach got kicked in the head by a cow.
That's also fair to point out. Texas A&M, I don't think they'll lose to Mississippi State. That number continues to rise. I think Indiana, undefeated. I think they're going to have their hands full this weekend with Northwestern. So, I think we're going to continue to see some wackiness, unfold here as the weeks go on. And, next week we got Penn State taking on Wisconsin. Wisconsin's been playing better as of late. Do you see Wisconsin at home against Penn State? Is that game more of a challenge there than that they're bargained for? So, yeah, we're not done yet, man. And that's the beauty of this sport. And once again, I know I say this every single week, but that's why I think the 12-team playoff, I don't think it waters down the sport. I think it makes it more intriguing. I think there's more teams involved. I mean, Indiana is 6-0. They play Ohio State and Michigan still. There's no way we would ever talk about them in the 4-team playoff era. But now in this playoff era, sure. Why couldn't Indiana make the playoff as an 11-1 team from the Big Ten?
I mean, if an 11-1 Big Ten team is, I don't care how soft their schedule is. That team's going to get in.
I mean, they would end up, if they go 11-1, assuming they lose to Ohio State, they would beat Nebraska, Washington, Michigan. I mean, it's not great, but they're an 11-1 Big Ten team if that happens. So, I mean, and that's the weird thing, too. And you mentioned, the Georgia schedule, because you flip it, and I know Missouri's already been handed a loss, but what do you do with a 10-2 Missouri whose two losses are A&M and Alabama? Hey, they're a 10-2 SEC team. Okay, who are their best wins? Is it Vanderbilt? Maybe. I mean, that's looking better and better each and every week. But they would have no signature win, but they'd be a 10-2 SEC team. And Georgia could be 9-3 with wins over what? Clemson and Tennessee. And losses to Bama, Georgia, and who would be the third loss there? Bama, Georgia, and Ole Miss in that scenario.
And I think that's kind of so the reason why I was bringing up the scheduling, because whether or not it was intentional, the Big Ten has kind of set it up to where I think the Big Ten is pretty safely getting three teams in. And, they had Ohio State and Oregon play each other, but really the two teams that had the toughest schedules are Michigan and USC. Well, they weren't really the contenders, so they've set the floor. I think the SEC schedules, the way that it was, I think it allowed for a high ceiling of teams, but you run into this issue of if the teams that you were counting on haven't been dependable, have you left yourself vulnerable?
I think the question that begs is a couple. It's how many ACC teams are getting in? Does Miami stub its toe at some point? Does Clemson stub its toe at some point? If Clemson and Miami meet in the ACC championship at 12-0 Miami and 11-1 Clemson, they're both getting in. So you're just kind of playing the numbers game. And then you go to the Big 12. Iowa State's still undefeated with a win over Iowa in their back pocket, which is pretty impressive in the non-con winning that game. You look at the Utah game later on in the season, looks less daunting. I mean, Iowa State's schedule right now has opened up quite considerably, where they're home to UCF, they're home to Texas Tech, who's now 3-0, surprisingly. You're air quotes at Kansas, which is Arrowhead Stadium, where they'll have more fans than Kansas, and Kansas is a bit of a disaster. Home to Cincinnati, playing better, but they're still not better than you. At Utah without Cam Rising, and then home to Kansas State. I'm not saying Iowa State's running the table, but if they're 12-0, going to the Big 12 championship, win or lose, they're in.
All right, let's take... Well, are you good there?
No, I'm good, yeah.
Okay, let's take a quick break. So we've got Blake Topmeyer coming up. We'll have him. We're going to get back, of course, into the football slate during hour number two. But when we come back, Blake Topmeyer joins the program next, right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Pleased now to welcome to the program, of course, Blake Topmeyer joins us each and every Friday. He is the senior national college football columnist for the USA Today Sports Network. His podcast, SEC Football Unfiltered, available each and every week wherever you get your podcasts. He's on Twitter, on X, at B Topmeyer. He is currently laid over in Nashville as he makes his way to Austin. I guess that's kind of the first question I have for you. Do you want to preview this week, or you want to talk about what we saw last weekend?
Ooh, could go either direction. Let's start in reverse. Let's wrap up last weekend.
Okay, you were down in Baton Rouge, and you and I talked about this, and I think you were spot on, because while that was clearly not the biggest game of the weekend, it probably had the biggest implications in terms of what would happen to either team in a loss. Now Ole Miss off a bye, and you know they've started to sustain some injuries. Like, I do think that where they go is fascinating. How did you kind of see it? Because when I saw the locker room scenes and I saw the post game whatnot, oh boy, that was a team that did not expect to lose.
Yeah, and I didn't expect them to lose in a lot of ways. I mean, they were controlling that game throughout three quarters, but it just had that feel of, you know, they weren't putting them away. They were squandering scoring opportunities. And you did wonder, like, is this going to come bite them in the end, despite the fact that they controlled the first three quarters of that game? I mean, the first quarter in particular just really, I mean, that really backfired. They should have been ahead 17-0 at the end of the first quarter, and it was scoreless. That they completely dominated the first quarter play, had no points to show for it. And now, in terms of, like, the where do they go from here, I mean, the schedule's not that tough, but they got Georgia lurking, and they have no margin for error. And I just don't think it's going to be in the cards for this team. So what was supposed to be a dream season for Ole Miss, you know, now kind of comes crashing down. And the question is, like, what does it mean for LSU? Because I think it was a playoff eliminator for Ole Miss in a lot of ways. Mathematically, no, but realistically, yes. But I'm not convinced that LSU is a playoff team just because they won that game. It just means that they're more in contention than what Ole Miss is.
No, I completely agree, because I said on a post-game show that I did with my old bosses, Ole Miss didn't lose that game in the fourth quarter in overtime. They lost that game in the first quarter. They had the chance to absolutely hit the knockout punch. You end up going 3 of 5 on red zone opportunities, and you got 13 points. And to me, that's kind of what we saw. And I kind of contrast it with what we saw with Tennessee, because to me, if you look at it with Ole Miss, the LSU loss stung to the fan base, but the reason why it really stung is because they lost to Kentucky. And now you contrast it with Tennessee. Tennessee's played two toss-up games that they could have easily lost, but they were able to eke out the win against Florida, and they get the split, and still you're fine. So, like, to me, like, that's kind of what I think the season's going to come down to when we start determining who are the alsos, if you will, the other playoff teams that the SEC is going to get. I think what it's going to be is who ends up surviving those close games.
That's right. Did you win your games when you didn't have your 95-mile-an-hour heat, your arm was at about 85%, and you were getting by with 89-mile-an-hour fastballs? You know, I mean, that's sort of it. Did you win your mediocre performances, your stinkers? And you're right. I mean, Tennessee, if they don't get in the playoff, they are going to look back at that Arkansas stinker and say that's what cost them. But the fact that they did survive against Florida with a lot of help from Billy Napier, let's be honest, you know, that at least keeps them alive. I mean, if they had to run the table at this point, I think we'd be talking about how it's curtains for Tennessee. But the fact that they just have to split against Alabama and Georgia, hold serve elsewhere, I think that gives them a realistic path. And so, you know, we were talking last week about how LSU Ole Miss felt like an elimination game for the loser, even though it's mathematically not. I think Alabama-Tennessee has a very similar feel this week. I mean, again, mathematically, the loser only has two losses. You could run the table, still get in, but knowing what each program has left, you know, Tennessee road trip to Georgia, which Georgia's back might be against the wall if they lose to Texas, so that'd be a must-win game for Georgia in their place. I wouldn't want my playoff hopes coming down to that game if I'm Tennessee. And then with Alabama, you know, they have a road trip left against LSU, which I think is exactly the type of team that can give Alabama problems because, you know, what LSU does well is Garrett Nussmeier and those wide receivers. And I think Alabama's biggest vulnerability is their defensive secondary and their pedestrian pass rush. So if I'm Alabama, I don't want my season coming down to having to beat LSU at Baton Rouge. And they got some other tough games too. So it does. That's the game this week that sort of feels like Ole Miss LSU last week is this Alabama-Tennessee game.
What's the right way to view Texas A&M right now?
Dangerous team that I don't think anybody wants to face, that I think has you know, as good of a schedule draw of any one-loss team in the SEC out there right now. I mean, even the Texas game, I think a lot of us are like penciling that Texas game into the loss column and saying like, okay, they can't stub their toe anywhere else and they'll be fine. But I mean, yeah, I guess we can put Texas in the loss column, but make sure that's in pencil and not ink, because that game in College Station, the first time those teams playing in that rivalry game in 13 years, I mean, that one feels like it's not automatic for Texas by any means. And so even if they go into that game needing to win it, I still give them a chance, but I mean, if they can beat LSU at home in a week, I think the Aggies have a great chance of being a playoff team. Like I said, this is a team that just feels like nobody wants to play right now. The time to get them was probably early. New coaching staff, new offensive system. Connor Wigman sure didn't have it figured out in that first game, you know, the loss to Notre Dame. Do they have it all figured out now? I'm not sure. Maybe that game against Missouri said more about Missouri than it did A&M. But this does seem to be like a team that has improved since the season's gone along. And like I said, of all the one-loss teams in the SEC, I feel like the schedule breaks in their favor more than most.
Well, and I like kind of how you phrased it there, because the way that I look at A&M is I think A&M has room to develop and improve as the season goes on. How much room does Texas really have to improve? Now, they're starting at a much, much higher position. But, I mean, realistically, how much better can Texas get? I mean, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like we've seen their best. It's awesome. But A&M, there is still kind of the, you know, if they get the Missouri version of Connor Wegman, which I'm not the biggest fan of saying that because he played literally the best game I've ever seen him play. And so sometimes we do the move of, man, if he could just play like that. Well, yeah, he had a special performance. Like that's like everyone has that game where they play like that. But he clearly does. He gives them more than Marcel Reed. And I did not know if that was true before the Missouri game.
I totally agree. Like I was thinking when they pivoted away from Marcel Reed back to Connor Wigman from Missouri, I'm like, if this goes south for them, Mike Elko looks like a stooge in year one for pivoting away from a guy who had won three straight games for him while Wigman was hurt. But I thought that was a really kind of courageous move from Mike Elko, because we do not see coaches a lot when you got something working with a quarterback. They just don't like to change. And I know Wigman started the year.
By the way, especially with a defensive guy.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, hey, if we can win games with this guy at quarterback, I'm a defensive guy, why would I change it? So I did think that was a bit of an uncommon move, but good for him for doing it, because it was clear in that Missouri game, Connor Wingman gives him a higher ceiling, gives him more balance than what Marcel Reed does. But I think you hit on a good point there with Wingman. You know, everybody says, like, oh, if he can just play like that. The way I look at it, though, is, like, he doesn't even have to play like he did against Missouri. Like, if he can give, like, 85% of that, they are good enough in other areas for them to make the playoff. Like, we know their defense is solid. We know their run game is pretty good. They just needed to have some above-average play at quarterback and wide receiver to sort of start to look like a playoff team. And they had great play at quarterback, wide receiver against Missouri. But I think if it can be good, you know, it doesn't have to be great from here on out. But if it stays good, at least, at quarterback and wide receiver from here, I think they have as good a chance as any one-loss team in the SEC. Because, you know, even if it came down to that Texas game, and I'm not sure it's going to, they may roll into that Texas game with one loss. But even if it came down to that Texas game, Texas may already be in the playoff at that point. And it's still a huge rivalry game. I'm not saying Texas is just going to roll over. But it would mean more to A&M at that point. At home, two losses, win, you're in the playoff, lose, you're not. And your whole season comes down to that game. And, yeah, that I would not be ready to rule out A&M at that one.
Well, I mean, to your point, it's entirely possible we get to that game and we already know those two. If A&M wins, they're playing again the next week. And if you're Texas, you're sitting there going like, all right, well, you know what I mean? Like, we spent all this time talking about could the Army-Navy game happen in back-to-back weeks with meaningless football. It's like, we can maybe do the same thing with Texas and A&M.
It's so true, yeah. And if so, if you're Texas and you know you're going to Atlanta anyway, do you want to show your best stuff in the regular season game, or do you want to save it for the possible rematch and the game that's going to decide the first round bye? I mean, you know, some different things could happen. If Georgia were to beat Texas, then maybe Texas isn't in that scenario where they know they're going to be in Atlanta regardless of result. But, you know, Texas wins Saturday and gets to that week, you know, that Thanksgiving weekend game undefeated. Yeah, in some ways it's like you try to win the game, but if you think you're going to face A&M possibly again the next week in Atlanta, you're like, I'm not sure we're showing them our best stuff. We're going to save a little something in the chamber for the possible rematch that's going to decide to buy.
We're talking, of course, with Blake Topmeyer, senior national college football columnist for the USA Today Sports Network. Make sure you're listening to his podcast, SEC Football Unfiltered. All right, let's get to the weekend, because I mean, we can say what we want about conference realignment. Saturday's been pretty good this year, and we got we certainly got a banger in Austin, Texas. I mean, it is hilarious to me that 5-1 Alabama, 5-1 Tennessee, it feels like such a mid-card game. So let's start with the big one first, because we're going to talk about Tennessee, Bama too. Here's the thing that I'm interested, because I was texting with you last night. I watched last weekend the Oregon-Ohio State game, and as much as I enjoyed watching that game and how fun it was and what a good game it was, I found myself going, man, these two teams aren't as good as Texas. And I don't believe I'm smart. So I think my instinct is usually wrong. And so I decided, I was like, all right, I'm going to dig into Texas. Are they as great as they look? It's entirely possible that's the case. But do you realize how many top 50 offenses they've played?
It's zero, right?
Zero. Top 75 offenses, zero. They've played one top 100 offense. It's Mississippi State. Weirdly, I trust Georgia's offense more than I trust Georgia's defense, and I think most people, like, we struggle with that. I understand Brent Venables is a very good defensive coordinator, and he's built his career on confusing quarterbacks, particularly early, and they really muddied the picture for Quinn Ewers. But Quinn missed throws that he hasn't missed all year, and he just kind of looked off. I don't think this is a game he can afford to be off.
No, I agree with you there. And the question is, like, is that the game one back after injury rust,
right,
or is that a lingering concern? And that I don't know. Like, because the image of in my mind of Texas is the week two Texas team that we saw destroy Michigan. And I know Michigan's not that good, but being there in the building that day, you know, you're still playing in a hostile environment. Michigan's still got a pretty good defense, and Texas just destroyed them. I mean, Quinn Ewers was awesome in that game. His wide receivers were awesome. His offensive line played like the best offensive line in the country. And so, like, I walked out of the building that day thinking, I just saw the best team in the nation. And I knew full well. I mean, we've been talking since summer. Like, Michigan's not a playoff team. So it wasn't like I thought, oh, they beat the defending national champions. It wasn't that impressed me so much. It was just, like, the way they did it. I mean, they crushed them. They left no hope.
I think the lowest margin final score it could have been was what it was. They spent the entire second half just absolutely coasting.
Yeah, because they put the game on ice by halftime, and they just suffocated all life out of them. And so, like, that's the image I still have of Texas in my mind. And they weren't necessarily that team against Oklahoma. And they still won very comfortably, but I think you're right. Like, Quinn Ewers was not last week the Quinn Ewers he was in week two. So it's like, if Texas plays like they did against Michigan, they are the better team. They are better than Georgia, I think. You know, we have this image in our mind of Georgia, like, oh, they always have the most talent, you know, in the past several years. I don't actually think they do this year. I think they are one of the five most talented teams in the country. But I think when each team has their best game, I think Texas is better. But it's like, what Quinn Ewers are we going to get on Saturday? If he isn't the good Quinn Ewers, then, yeah, I give Georgia a chance. And it's possible. It is possible, I think, what you were hitting on earlier, that maybe Texas's defense isn't as good as we thought, and they could be exploited. Like, I mean, there's no real signs of that yet, but, you know, like you were talking about, they haven't faced a good offense yet. I mean, I put, like, Tennessee's defense in the same category. Like, we're all at this point believing that Tennessee actually has a good defense, and I think they do. We've seen it enough weeks now, but Tennessee has still not played a good offense. I mean, Florida was the best offense they faced, and frankly, Florida probably should have had some more points if not for Billy Napier. But I mean, this is sort of still a prove it game, I think, for Texas. Whereas for Georgia, it's I don't want to say it's a desperation game, but it avoids them. They need to win to avoid being in desperation mode, because, you know, we can say, like, Georgia gets to two losses, they're still fine, they'd be favored in every game remaining on the rest of their schedule, sure, but, like, there's several games left for Georgia that are not gimmies. And I'm not convinced. I know Greg Sankey would spend all day politicking for them to get into the playoff at 9-3, but I'm not 100% convinced that there would be a spot for them at 9-3. So, I mean, this is a more important game for Georgia than Texas, but it is, I think, to your point, a little bit of a prove-it game for Texas. Even though they're the number one team in the country, it's like, this could remove all doubt that they're the best team in the nation.
I know we've talked about it a little bit with the scheduling and the way that it felt like the SEC gave the tougher schedules to the teams that they probably trusted more, and whether or not that's intentional, like, you know, who's to say one way or the other. I did find myself wondering, has this schedule thing backfired? Because now we're going to start getting into this weird spot that you're talking about, where we start gaming out, well, if Georgia loses this one and Ole Miss and Georgia meet up at 9-2 or whatever, 8-2, whatever they would be at that point. Which, by the way, I'm not sure Ole Miss is – this idea that Ole Miss is going to get to that Georgia game with two losses, ooh, boy, I'm not sure about that. But we're also getting into this weird spot where I'm not – like, the wins could kind of end up, like, hurting you, because, like, if you're Ole Miss and I give you at the beginning of the year, you're going to beat Georgia at home. Well, everyone would go, well, that'd be one of the best wins of the year. Well, then you could be in that spot where you just, you know, it's three loss Georgia, and then, or maybe Georgia loses to Tennessee and it's like 8-4 Georgia. Mm-hmm. Is that still a good win? And then the same thing could hold true for Georgia. Well, they went on the road and they beat Ole Miss. Well, what if Ole Miss is like cratering and they're 7-5? And what if Tennessee loses this weekend and that's not a good win? Like, I do feel like they're in kind of this awkward spot where the schedule might have backfired a little bit.
Yeah, the best way to stockpile the most playoff teams, I think we're finding out, is for your best teams to have a manageable enough schedule to where they can go like 11-1 and remove all doubt.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, you know, like you're saying, and we've talked about this before, I don't know if it was intentional or unintentional, but the way the SEC set it up, it was almost like they were trying to stockpile like seven playoff contenders, to where you give the tough schedules to the top teams and say, ah, they're going to figure out a way to get to 11-1 or 10-2 anyway. And then you give the little bit easier schedules to your Missouris, Ole Misses, and Tennessees and say, yeah, we'll get them to 10-2 as well. But it's not working out like that for the SEC. And meanwhile, like, the Big Ten's set up to where there's going to be no drama, I don't think, between Ohio State, Penn State, Oregon. I think those teams are all going to be safely on the right side of the cut. And you're going to get the Big Ten is going to get its three best teams into the playoff, I think, without much drama. And again, I don't know whether that's intentional scheduling, unintentional scheduling. I mean, Oregon and Ohio State did play, so you did have your two best teams in that conference playing each other. But it doesn't feel like anybody in the Big Ten got like the Georgia schedule draw, where you're on the road at Alabama, you're on the road at Texas, you're on the road at Ole Miss. Like, there's no equivalent to that, you know, the Big Ten, one of their top teams drew. I mean, Southern Cal and Michigan probably got the two toughest, but we didn't think they were top three teams,
right,
in the Big Ten coming into the season. So they gave their top three teams, you know, the more manageable schedules. And I think that's why they're going to have all three of their best teams in the playoff. Now, they may not get a fourth, but they're also, I think, you know, going to get their three best. So they got their best foot forward to win a national championship. Whereas, you know, you could see a scenario here where Georgia doesn't get in. And you know, I still feel like Georgia is one of those teams that if they get in, they could win the whole thing. I'm not putting them on the top tier anymore, but I do put them on that second tier of championship contenders, but they got to get in. And, you know, if they lose Saturday, I think I'm putting them on the outside of the bubble, because I don't trust them to run the table if they emerge out of Saturday with two losses.
All right, let's go to Knoxville, the team that you've covered, a city that you used to live in. It's the third Saturday in October. Both teams come in kind of vulnerable. Do you think that's fair to say?
Yeah, I think so.